from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Have you used FaceApp, the mobile tool that's become popular again, this time for a feature that ages your face so you can see what you might look like decades from now? Well, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called on the FBI and the FTC this week to investigate FaceApp. Schumer and some digital privacy advocates say the app company, which is based in St. Petersburg, Russia, could use your image and other data in dangerous ways. But some tech analysts say the company's data policies are essentially no different than U.S. companies. So how worried should you be if you downloaded the app? And what should you do to better safeguard your data? We're talking with Brian Barrett. He's a news editor at Wired. Good morning, Brian Barrett.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We also have Jeffrey Fowler with us. He's a technology columnist at The Washington Post based in San Francisco. And Jeffrey Fowler, I'll start with you. First, can you just describe for our listeners this feature of the Face app that's got celebrities and kids downloading it now like crazy?
It's incredible. It takes a photo of you, or you can take a photo with the camera on your phone, and will instantly make you look like an old person. It is kind of all the power of artificial intelligence kind of embodied in a really silly, stupid app. And I got to say, everyone's doing it because it's a lot of fun to see. When I did mine, I looked like my dad. It was incredible.
Yeah, they are able to kind of manipulate the wrinkles, the graying hair, and in some cases really look pretty incredible. But you downloaded it, so you clearly can't be that freaked out about whether or not FaceApp or the company behind FaceApp is going to use your data in nefarious ways.
Should we be concerned about this app? Yes. But we should also be concerned about lots of other apps and websites and services that are on our phones and on our computers. So I'm kind of two minds on this topic. On one level, I am glad that we are at a point as a society where we're having a conversation about, wait a minute, what's happening to my data when I download an app and use it? Because that has been woefully absent from the conversation for a long time. Why we're focusing on this one, though, I think may be a little misled. And I think it has a lot to do with just generally a fear in our society right now of Russia and of Russian technology. Because as you pointed out, this app happens to be made by a Russian company.
And it's probably no coincidence that it's the DNC who initially sounded the alarm in the middle of the week. I mean, they certainly have experience with Russian hacking. But that said, it sounds like you're saying we're kind of wading into potentially xenophobic territory here.
Well, we should be careful about that. And certainly this app, FaceApp, is not the only app in the App Store that have become popular that is owned by a foreign company. There's a really popular social networking app called TikTok. It is owned by a Chinese company. Should we be extra critical of and scrutinize it as well? Yes, we should probably, you know, but it doesn't necessarily make it that different from this one. I think one of the core problems here is that there's a big disconnect now between the kinds of information that we can get as consumers about what's actually happening to our data and what's available out there. You go to the iPhone App Store, you type in FaceApp, it doesn't really tell you what it's doing. You have to sort of rely that Apple or Google has vetted this thing. All they've really got now is a privacy policy. And if you open the privacy policy of this thing, it basically reserves perpetual rights to do whatever they want forever into history, to take your face and do whatever they want to with it. And that sounds scary. So we need to get to a better place where we have more actual answers about what's going on with these apps.
Yes. Speaking of sounding scary, Brian Barrett, I mean, part of the reason that this set people off is because of some scary language in, you know, FaceApp's privacy policy and how they use your data. So can you talk about that? But can you also talk about how you found very similar language in Facebook?
Well, yeah. And, you know, so when you agree to the terms and conditions of FaceApp, which no one actually really consciously does and reads, unfortunately, but you can't really be expected to, you do. You sign away a sub-license. You allow them to sub-license it and license it and use it in perpetuity in any way that they want, commercial purposes. And it all sounds very alarming. And I'm with Jeffrey on this. It is alarming, but it's not uniquely alarming. If you look in Facebook's terms of service, you have been giving Facebook the same basic permissions since you signed up 10 years ago. If you look at, if you want to talk about facial recognition, Facebook has used facial recognition on your photos for years. And again, that's not even to single out Facebook specifically. I think if you look at any app that you are uploading, especially a photo to, they're going to take those same licenses. That's sort of part and parcel of the agreements that we sign up for every day. And I think that, again, I don't think the onus should be on people to have to go through and read that, but I do think there needs to be a lot more thought, you know, while Congress is investigating FaceApp for its Russia ties, maybe also investigate the whole industry a little more robustly to get some sort of omnibus privacy protections in there for people.
We're talking about FaceApp, the app that millions of people have uploaded their photos to for the experience of seeing their faces in different ways. In this case, their faces age. And now lawmakers and others are sounding alarm bells about what could happen to your sensitive data in the hands of this Russian-based company. What questions do you have about the ways companies tend to set up data use and privacy policies, or about whether or not you should be worried about your data now that you gave your face to FaceApp? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, on Facebook and Twitter at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Now, Jeffrey Fowler, you spoke with the CEO of the company behind FaceApp.
I got him to reply to a couple of emails.
Okay, so just to help ground our listeners, what data do they take?
So I'm going to tell you what he said to me, and then we can judge separately whether we trust him.
Great.
And then also what I was able to verify on my own. He said that, to start with, there was this rumor kind of going around that because the app could access your entire camera roll, that it was taking every photo you've ever taken and sending it to Russia. He said that is not true. He said that the app was only uploading to the cloud, to their cloud, to do the processing, the photo that you asked it to age. And then they held on to that photo for 48 hours, to most of them. He used the word most. And then I asked, okay, so does that mean that the Russian government then has access to this collection of photos? He said no. He said photos uploaded from places other than Russia, so the United States, never went to Russia. They are stored in servers elsewhere. So according to the CEO of this company, the Russian government does not get our photos. I also asked him, okay, so are you using these photos for anything other than sort of the main purpose of the app, which is, you know, to make our faces look old? Are you running, for example, some big facial recognition database, like Facebook does with us, actually? And he said, no, they are not doing that. They are only in the business of making us look old.
And you believe him?
I have not found any evidence to not believe him. For example, when I looked under the hood and other people looked under the hood at what the app was doing and uploading, I saw that it was uploading a single photo, or what appeared to be at least just one photo. I also saw that it was using trackers for Facebook and for Google, which are really common in apps. Not that that's a good thing, but they do that. So that was the one thing that he said to me that sort of did disagree a little bit in what I found. He said that they don't share any of our data with any third parties. And I found, well, Facebook and Google are in there, but as they are with everyone else. So again, I haven't seen, and maybe Brian, you'd tell me if you've seen anything since then that really would indicate that they were lying. Now, it'd be hard for us to know. These are their servers, though, right? It's probably all encrypted and stored someplace where we can't look.
Yes, to see if they are, in fact, deleting your photos after 48 hours. But so, Brian Barrett, even though Jeffrey Fowler at this point couldn't identify anything, you know, shady, if somebody is uncomfortable with having their photo part of FaceApp, can they delete their data? Can they delete that image and know that it's been deleted for sure?
Well, this gets down to another area of trust. FaceApp says that they do have a mechanism by which people can request that their data is deleted, but you have to go into a bug report. You have to sort of dig into your settings. You have to, you know, put the subject line privacy or something like that. It's a very convoluted number of steps that is not at all intuitive to someone who actually wants to get their data off it. And even once you go through those steps, again, there's no way to really confirm that it's gone from their servers. So the company says that they are working on improving the mechanisms by which to get those photos deleted faster. But again, you can't really tell. I do think, to Jeffrey's point, in terms of the one thing I would add is I do think there is some confirmation that they are using Amazon Web Services. So they are using Amazon Cloud in the U.S. So I do think that the suggestion that they are keeping your photos not in Russia, but in the U.S. or other parts of the country, that does seem valid.
So the fact, Brian Baird, that this company uses servers in the U.S. does matter?
I think it does. I mean, I think it makes it harder for the Russian government, for example, can't compel Amazon to hand over data, whereas if the, you know, if the servers were in Russia, they potentially could. It doesn't totally absolve them. You know, if they just want to hand over the data, they could, and you couldn't really know that. But I think it is – it at least shows that there's – yeah, it doesn't seem as actively nefarious, let's say that. It shows that they are just abiding by, you know, what our industry practices.
Well, Jeffrey Fowler tried the app. Did you, Brian Barrett? Did you try it?
You know, I confess I have not, although I wouldn't say it's because of fear of what will happen, because I, you know, part of me is, unfortunately, I'm a little bit resigned to having used Facebook and other apps for so long. I'm a little bit resigned to my data just being out there. And I shouldn't be. I should be more proactive. But I haven't used it yet personally. And I also didn't use it. I want to say I didn't use it 2 years ago when it went viral before. This is our second time around with FaceApp.
Yes.
So I do think it's interesting that it's coming up now again.
Well, tell us a little bit more about this company, just so that people have a better sense of or put in context, you know, the comments that we heard from its CEO. It's got an interesting history, Brian Barrett.
Yeah, so as I understand it, and Jeffrey may help fill in some blanks here too, is a former Microsoft developer, I believe, who went to Russia and just sort of started a facial recognition app several years ago. In 2017, it went viral. It was hugely popular, and people raised concerns over it then, a little bit over privacy, but there was more focus. They had some, let's say, culturally insensitive filters that you could apply to your face, and they caught a lot of backlash for that. And then it kind of died down again, as viral things do. And then pops back up on the radar because of this aging technology. I think obviously a lot has changed since then. Cambridge Analytica made people more aware of their data. You know, the Mueller investigation made people more aware of Russian activity. But yeah, the company itself seems largely unchanged in that time.
And again, Brian Barrett is news editor at Wired. We're also talking with Jeffrey Fowler, the technology columnist at The Washington Post. And with you, our listeners, and Kate in Greenbrae start us off. Hi, Kate.
Hi. So my questions are for the two guests. Why would I trust the Russian government or a Russian company? Why would I trust China or a Chinese company? I don't really even trust Facebook. And none of this stuff is enforceable. They make it difficult for you to control your data. You'll never know whether it's off their server. So I find this really alarming.
That's kind of the point, isn't it, Jeffrey Fowler, to some extent? It's like, what should we be worried about here, that this company is based in another country or that this company has a privacy policy and practices that are very similar to other companies here in the U.S.
Right. These are choices that we are making, whether or not we realize it or not, every time we download and use an app. There are a lot of apps that are based in Russia or China or other kinds of countries. Unfortunately, the app stores that we have don't really flag that to you, right? You don't really get a lot of information about that. They don't really analyze the privacy policies for you to kind of break it down. I also don't really have a good idea of how much vetting Google and Apple are doing of these companies going in. I mean, this is the number one most downloaded app on an iPhone. It was a Google editor's choice. So are they talking to the CEO as well and saying, prove to us that you deleted after 48 hours? These companies it's a kind of a black box. And I think that's one element that needs to change here.
Yeah. Brian Barrett, what are the responsibilities of companies like Google and Apple here?
Yeah, you know, right now they sort of take a little bit of a passive stance. They'll sort of try to confirm that it's not malware, for example. So there are checks in terms of what gets into the store. But it's true that once they're there, you know, they aren't as rigorous as they could be. And I suspect they won't be. You know, I think they want to be sort of a free marketplace for good and for bad. And I think until there's some sort of regulatory or legal pressure to, you know, make sure that stronger protections are in place, I don't think they're going to sort of voluntarily appear.
Well, let's go to listener Gary in San Jose. Hi, Gary.
Hey, I'm a security professional and just want to give people some tips about how to use apps like this if they don't necessarily trust the developer. And just because they're a Russian developer doesn't mean they're necessarily bad. Just because they're a U.S. developer doesn't mean they're good. So if you want to use an app like this without security risk, just put it on an old phone, delete all of your information off that phone first, and then just take your picture and have fun with it. And when you're done, you can just wipe the phone and there's no harm.
That'll do it, Jeffrey Fowler?
That will help certainly some. Now, just because you've deleted the app does not mean that your data has been deleted from the server of this company, right? Deleting the app from your local phone only deletes the local data there. If you want to make sure your face is also not stored by this this Russian company, you have to put in the request to them, which is, you know, pretty difficult right now, and then trust that they're actually deleting it.
So what did you do when you uploaded your image? Like, did you – how much information did you give them in addition to your photo?
So this is an interesting point as well. Actually, a lot less than many other apps actually require. Some other apps require you to sign in. You have to give an email address or your name. This requires none of it. And that was another point that the CEO made to me in his email. 99% of the users of FaceApp do not give them their name or their email address.
And just for the record, once again, they do not – they can't access your camera roll? They cannot
they
will not?
They have access to your camera roll, but they say they do not upload all of it. They only upload the photo that you you told them to. And again, that's what we've seen happening.
Greg in San Jose. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm I work in the field of data and security privacy. And the policies from these companies is only half of the equation. The other half of the equation is their policies for conforming with government data search requests. So in the case of Russia-based companies and China-based companies, the government requires that data access be extremely broad so that in the case of Russia-based companies, GRU is able to make very vast and sweeping requests for data that go across all of their servers all over the world. And the same is true for China-based companies. So you have to really be careful about where your data is going. And the only way that I can recommend that you be informed about this is by staying current on sort of the relationship between these governments and the companies based in those areas.
Whew. Well, Greg, thanks. I mean, you're probably right, but I bet that's a tall order if we can't even get Brian Barrett people to read privacy policies. Which leads me to this question. I mean, is the fight for digital privacy a lost cause to some extent? I mean, if there's going to be, or at least getting people to think about when they use, when they upload their images or the images of other people, it just feels like if it's a really cool feature and a lot of people are doing it, you know, caution to the wind. It just seems like there's very little pause there, Brian Barrett. I mean, how do we address that?
Well, I think that's largely true. I don't want to say it's a lost cause, though. And if anything, I think, you know, the fact that there is a blowback against FaceApp is a sign that people are thinking about this more seriously than they were in the past. And I think, but I think the important thing, though, is that the onus shouldn't be on you as the consumer of this app and the person who downloads it. You should not have to read through all of this legalese. You should not. That shouldn't be something that you have to think about every time you have an experience in the app store or on your phone. And in terms of regulation, I think we are seeing some progress. I think, you know, California has a pretty robust privacy law in the works. It's still sort of developing. We've got a bunch of bills going through Congress that, you know, may or may not succeed. But there's at least more of an interest there. It's much more of a topic of conversation, both among consumers and among legislators, in a way that I think that to say that, you know, we're sort of past the point of no return, I don't think so. And I hope not. I think that we can get to a place where there are at least some guardrails when right now we really don't have any.
You're hopeful, Jeffrey Fowler?
I totally agree. I think this is a tipping point that says people care now. And that means our legislators need to pay attention. And that means these companies need to pay attention. And they need to start competing for our dollars around privacy. For listeners who are here in California, starting January 1st, we have some pretty incredible new rights because of California's privacy law. We will all be able to request from any company what data they have about us and also ask them to delete it. That is going to change the game. That is going to basically become America's default privacy law.
Well, Kevin says, it sounds like it's not the app we need to be afraid of. It's the terms of service that should be scary to all of us. How is this even legal? Shouldn't there be international internet rights that can't be signed away with a click on a document that no one reads? And Michael says, I'm less worried that FaceApp is a Russian company and more that they've handed a face-to-name database for over 150 million people without any checks or accountability, that they've been handed this face-to-name database. This is how mass facial recognition gets built. And, of course, the facial recognition fears, you know, the police databases. Those are the things that really also have people concerned, Jeffrey Fowler.
As they should, yeah. We are also having a really important conversation right now about the use of facial recognition technology by police or even at airports. It's being used to sort of as your boarding ticket for flights now. And there's this kind of casual sprinkling around of it in our society without really big conversations about the implications of that.
Well, Eric in Los Altos, go ahead.
Thanks for having me on. Great segment. I'm a Wired subscriber. So the one thing I wanted to bring up that I don't think you've talked about is metadata on photos, the EXIF data, which includes, for example, the location where the photo was taken, such as your house. And I'm not sure whether this app uploads the EXIF data, but I would assume it does. And that's valuable data that is very, very dangerous.
Well, Brian Barrett, how worried should we be about the EXIF data, the metadata on our photos?
I will also defer to Jeffrey in case he saw something that I have not seen. But I don't know that in this particular case, I don't know how much of a concern that needs to be relative to the sort of broader, not being sure what they're doing with it in the first place. I think that, you know, the photo itself and sort of the black hole that it goes into, whatever else goes with it, I think is a concern. I haven't really seen much around the EXIF data, to be honest with you. So I don't know that they're getting it, and I'm not sure what they would be doing if they did.
Jeffrey Fowler, can you shed any light on this?
I am not 100% certain whether whether when you upload a photo via an iPhone, it includes the location tag on that photo. We would have to study that. However, there is a new version of iOS coming out in a couple of months that gives you the ability to take the location tag off of any photo that you're sharing. So, if you are concerned about this stuff, and it sounds like millions of people are, there are new tools that can help you with these sorts of apps.
Well, Eric, thanks for the question. I'll go next to Bob in San Francisco. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Just a quick question. As I understand it, you can unlock your phone with a face, right? So this is an iPhone feature. I'm wondering if anybody with pictures of us now can unlock our phones and do what they will with them, because they can have all the pictures they want.
Bob, thanks. Jeffrey Fowler.
A really good question. This stuff is really confusing because there are all kinds of different technologies called facial recognition. The way an iPhone works is that it not only takes a photograph of your face, but it actually has depth sensors. It actually has little things that are invisible to you that make a map of your face, and it won't unlock unless there's actually a face there. People have even tried making death masks of people's faces to see if it'll unlock the phone, and even those really don't work super well. Sometimes it gets confused by twins, but a single photo alone will not unlock an iPhone.
Well, Bob, thanks for the question. And it just highlights, you're right, how confusing all of this really is. It also highlights, I think, in Bob's case a little bit, he's also talking about the lack of control we have of our own image generally. I mean, there have been concerns about people uploading other people's faces to FaceApp without their permission because they were so curious about what they would look like decades from now. Let's go next to Ron in Richmond. Hi, Ron.
Good morning. So, the idea that California's privacy law is going to protect us because we can request companies to delete our name is kind of naive, because the moment a company has your name, the moment you show up because you searched for something or whatever, it gets shattered and sold off to everybody in the world. Every digital marketing firm in the world winds up with your name on a list. Oh, Ron's shopping for a car. Oh, Ron's interested in pans for baking bread. Oh, and you start getting all this mail. So I could call the original company and say, take me off the list. It wouldn't matter. It's just everybody's got it. And it's really naive to think otherwise.
Until
we can prohibit them from transferring the name or create a personal copyright, so they got to pay us every time somebody uses it, we have no protection.
Well, Ron, let me let Brian Barrett weigh in. What do you think about how robust are California's privacy laws that will take effect?
I think Ron's touching on something very important, which is there's this whole, you know, you think of the companies that you know have your data, right? You think, oh, well, I'll send a note to Google, I'll send a note to Facebook. But, you know, there's this whole underground economy of data brokers, the companies that you've never heard of, who have files and databases filled with hundreds of millions of people sometimes with their names, their interests. I've seen some leaks or exposed data of this that included my own, information in a way that I was not very comfortable with. So I absolutely understand what he's talking about. I don't think, though, that makes the California law useless or means that it shouldn't be celebrated. I think of it as a step. I think of it as an important step of, well, here's something we can do. And then once we get that and we kind of make that the norm, not just in California, but the United States, then we'll see what else we can do. And we'll sort of keep pushing and pushing because otherwise, I think, you know, given as much rope as they want, that these companies will just, all they're going to do is take more and more. So every little bit towards that sort of fuller solution, I think, is valuable.
Well, let me thank Ron for the call. And this listener says, whatever FaceApp's privacy policy is, it goes completely out the window when their servers get hacked and the data's leaked or sold on the black market, as we've seen happen so many times already. So we just have a little bit of time left. Just quickly give us a few tips to send us off into the weekend before we download happily. just what we should do before we upload images to an app or before we download something to our phones. Just a quick couple of steps that we so often forget. I'll start with you, Jeffrey Fowler.
I agree with that last listener's comment. Hacking is also a problem. So think of it this way. More data, more problems. So if you're worried about data, give as little of it as possible to people, especially if you don't know who they are. What I recommend, look at your phone. Do you see any apps on there that you haven't used in a while? Do you see any apps on there that you don't really know how they make money? If so, delete them. Do this every couple of months. That is the best way to keep your phone healthy.
Brian Barrett, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo that, and I would say, you know, checking your phone every so often, but also, you know, before you jump on the next viral fad, just, you know, think about how they're making money. You know, think about what's in it for the company. Every time you sign up, especially if it's a free service, think about how they might turn what you give them into profit and how comfortable you are with that.
This really quick, do you think the fear of the investigation by Schumer is worth it, Brian Barrett? Do you think it's called for?
In this specific case, I can't
say.
Probably not. But what I would say is that it's good that it's part of this pushing this conversation more broadly. So for that, I think yes. In terms of the specific company, couldn't say.
Brian Barrett, news editor at Wired. Jeffrey Fowler, technology columnist at The Washington Post. Thanks to both of you for answering our questions today. And I'm Mina Kim. Thanks to our listeners for your questions and comments. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.